Hello, you're listening to Crossing the Desert. This podcast is a reality series about how I build my small business in the Emirates. You will hear my calls to friends, the sounds of Dubai streets, and most importantly, the stories of entrepreneurs who opened a business and settled here in the Emirates. I'm Isaac. I came to Dubai to put down my roots here. The stories of entrepreneurs who have already succeeded here will help me on my way. In each episode, I interview people from India, Egypt, Palestine, Caribbean Islands, UK, and other countries. I don't know which ones yet because the story is just the beginning. The podcast is brought to you by Fortis, the omnichannel platform that integrates POS, CRM, orders, payments, and loyalty programs for small and medium-sized businesses. In the previous episode, you caught me in the dark moment of my story. Problems were piling up, I was tangled in projects and tired as hell. Maybe I'm trying too hard. Maybe I should lower expectations and lay back a little. Or focus on one thing at a time. Luckily, I have this podcast, which means an excuse to consult with other entrepreneurial people who, like me, are putting down roots in MENA. Today, I met with Washda Khalidi. She owns a brand of Palestinian olive oil, Levant. And what's special to me, she is building this business calmly, step by step, combining it with her office career. Listen to how she started.
I was working as an interior designer for a very long time. And then I changed to real estate agencies. I was living in Canada for a good while where we don't have Palestinian olive oil. And we used to drive for an hour and a half to places to get what is closest things to the Palestinian olive oil. I thought when I come to Dubai, I'll find all kind of, and you know, my option and this. And when I came to Dubai, I was not satisfied of the products in the city. I was surprised, first of all, that you have to buy a huge quantity from olive oil, and there is no right packaging that suits small family, or let's say a single person, whatever. And plus, whatever I taste, I find, I think there is much better quality than this. So I was after quality. That's when I decided I'll do that. I'll bring the olive oil from Palestine. I'll bring the main products that we cannot live without, like za'atar, summa, frike, maftul. These are very, very traditional things. We grew up with these things. So that's when I thought, okay, I'll bring it.
Washda worked in an office job, but in parallel, steady, gradually, she began to build a business, brick by brick. And she based it on a simple idea. She needed to bring to the market the product that she herself lacked. A lot of entrepreneurs start that way, but even if you only set realistic goals and build the business gradually, it's still a huge adventure. I just went into the Fortis office. I had a conversation with marketing director JP Sarhal about just that. There are no simple businesses.
One person that I have in mind, which is my customer. One group of people that I think about, it's our customers. They have put their money, their time, their energy, they've done a lot of sacrifice to get their business up and running. And so you cannot but, as a software provider like Fortis, think about how you can support these people in achieving their dreams. Their dreams doesn't mean that they're going to become multi-billionaires with 150 branches across the world. That can be their dream. But a lot of these businesses just want to have a sustainable business that allows them to feed their families and to grow and to be comfortable in life. And getting just to that level is quite difficult.
It's Washda again.
To open a business, you need to be serious. You want to do it. You want to continue doing it. It is something for years to come. If you don't want it for years to come, don't do it. Don't start it. Because at the beginning, it's all expenses. The first 3 years, 4 years, all expenses. It's not like it will give you lots of money. No, it's a learning curve also. You are learning in the first few years.
4 years of expenses? This is something I really find difficult to accept. For some reason, I believe that things would be different for me. I will come to Dubai and in a few months build something profitable and certainly large scale. Not Saudi Aramco, of course, but something notable. But Wajda advises me to get ready for a marathon.
So, no, I like the idea being in Dubai, starting this business for sure. I'm looking forward to grow and ship it to the international market. This is, we'll leave it to the future. Anyway, this will be my baby. I'm planning it as a retirement project for me. Slowly but surely, let it grow at ease. I'm not in a rush.
Retirement? So it's an ultra marathon. In that case, maybe getting an office job in parallel isn't such a bad idea. I need to discuss it with a friend.
Oh, it was one project here, one company. I would not name the names, but they have office in a very famous building here in Business Bay. We had a meeting. I remember I went to the washroom to fix my hair, to do something like that. And I look at myself, I was like, oh, look at you having meetings in the middle of Business Bay, coming here only recently and already like going through all the stages. And then I got upstairs. They took me to a meeting room, which was huge. And for me, the moment when I was like, I made it, was when they asked me a question about their current situation. And they had a very chaotic structure of marketing department. And I just told the truth the way I think, but in a very polite way. And I felt so confident in my skill and so confident in my answer that I was like, damn. I said what I really think, and they appreciated because it was my feedback as an expert who understood this topic. After that, I remember I was sitting in the lobby and drinking coffee. Again, I'm always drinking coffee. Like every time you'll see me, I'm just drinking coffee. I was sitting in that beautiful place and I would be like, I just had a meeting in this building. It went well because I wasn't nervous and I didn't feel like I am an outsider. I felt like an expert professional who is valued here.
Soon, I got offer from them. So, what to do? It's not an easy choice. The coolest thing about working in an office for me is not a salary twice a month, but that feeling when you know you're a pro, you're confident, and you can depend on your skills and getting the best results. That's what I lack in business. You know, I don't have an MBA. Like, my parents didn't teach me how to build a business. I do it by instinct, and I'm never, never 100% sure. So how about slowing down a bit and agreeing to the offer? But you know what I'm afraid of? What if I step back now, get a job in an office? What if I get consumed by routine stuff and will forget about my projects and business? It happened to Wajda once.
As I said, when I came to Dubai, I was not satisfied of the products in the city. They are not thinking, they are thinking of huge families. They are thinking of somebody come and take 15 kilos of olive oil or take a big bag of za'atar, whatever. What about the little people? What about the small families? What about the single people? Nobody cared. I did arrange everything. I did contact the people I know in the West Bank and I planned everything, all in a file. And ready to do it. Unfortunately, I got very sick at that time. And we're talking, this is maybe 8 years ago or whatever. So it happens. When I got sick, it's impossible to continue that project. So the file is closed. It has everything in it, even prices, everything. I was this close to launch it. But it happens. And after a couple of years, you forget, you get busy with your work, you know, like you don't think about it anymore. You know, it's something you were planning to do. You did all the homework, but there was no time or opportunity to do it.
But that was by no means the end of Wajda's story.
And then, of course, COVID came and we stuck. Do you remember when we stuck at home for a good while? What do you do? You either watch TV, eat,
or check all the projects, everything that you
have. Or you clean. Do house cleaning. You throw the papers you don't want. Yes. You do this, you do that. I was sitting there opening the file. I say, oh my God, why I didn't go through it? Why I didn't, after a couple of years, I should have started back. I should have this. And the funny thing, when I was going through everything, I said, wow, everything is organized.
Like, how comfortable.
Yeah, so why I didn't go through it? And, I continued and, things are good. Growing organically. Yes. Slowly, but surely. If I choose for it to grow very fast, I can. But at that time, I have to put full time with it. But the funny thing is, it was received very well, not only from the small families I was talking about and the single people, from European community and foreigners. So much to the point, 60% of my clients are from that category. Because these are the ones never had the opportunity to try Palestinian olive oil. Never had the opportunity. They tried it somewhere else, with friends maybe. And their friend, if they have Palestinian friends, they will give them a little bottle of that. Their father or their cousin or whatever send them, from the big tin. I find this was received absolutely wonderfully from them. And you can see from the sales, before Christmas, a lot of people, before they go home, they buy gifts. And it's heavy. Like the bottle will weigh 1 kilo. And when you only have certain amount of kilos, you think about it. But no, they don't care. They take a few for the family for Christmas. So it's been traveling very well.
How does it make you feel?
Very proud, very proud. Because the big thing for me is for the people to be introduced to the pure Palestinian quality, not just any quality. Unfortunately, some people, they bring the Palestinian product, but they ignore present it properly. They ignore treating it with respect. So any non-Arab or non-Palestinian wouldn't even pay attention to it. But when they actually taste it and try it, they get hooked to it. I have an Italian guy, he tells me he always put it on his pizza, the olive oil, which is Italian, they love olive oil, and they have a very special olive oil. But, to tell me I do this, and I like this, and I like your olive oil, this is fantastic. And it's tasty.
It is very tasty.
It has a taste.
Yes.
Which is, it's not like blanc. That's the difference.
I understand the clients that actually are ready to give up, 1-2 kilograms of their luggage. Just
Yes. And believe it or not, some of them, I have a few of the people who comes in holidays here, winter time, and they come to me. And they last year they took a few, and this year they are here to visit their son or daughter or whatever, and they come and take a few with them. So it became like we're talking about 3 years now, so cycle. So I start to know them even when they call. She tells me this is Anne from the U.S. I remember right away. I don't remember every people, of course.
Of course.
It's very difficult. But there are certain people who they make sure when they come for a holiday, they take some. This is amazing.
It is amazing.
This is what amazes me about small businesses. Huge supermarkets sell olive oil by tons, and they learn about their customers from statistics. And Warsta remembers their stories. Who added the oil to an Italian pizza, and who took it with them as a Christmas present?
What I have seen is the reaction of people when we've shown them some of the mock-ups or the upcoming products that are coming out whilst at Seamless, which is one of the leading event conferences in the Middle East.
As you can hear, it's JP again, the marketing director from Fortis.
What we showed them was the fact that you could send personal messages automatically, meaning reaching out to customers with messages on WhatsApp that sound and look personal. Now, the power of a small merchant is that they are able to maintain much more personal relationships with their customers than a big business could. Yes, a big business might have a lot of information about you because of your purchase history, because of their advanced solutions, because they have a full team of people hired to target you at the right time, through the right channel, with the right message. But those messages are very often translated into an email or a very generic WhatsApp message or text message. Now, that doesn't build a relationship. It builds convenience, but it doesn't build a relationship. It's convenient because I know that my favorite product is back in stock and that company has informed me about it. That's perfectly convenient, but it's not personal. If I were to tell you, for example, let's say that you love a shop that sells glasses and you are someone who has bought several pairs of glasses from that shop. Imagine if I sent you a message on WhatsApp with a sun emoji, for example. I know that previously you've preferred glasses that are transparent with a tortoise colored acrylic. I just got this new collection and I think it could fit you very well. Why don't you come to the shop and check it out for yourself? I'm serving coffee, by the way. See, like that's a much more personal message that can be automated. And you're allowed to have that kind of warm approach because you're a small business. If I come from a big company, it would feel weird, in my opinion, to have such a message written by the customer account support who I've never met in my life. Send me such a message because I'd be like, hold on, we're not friends, for you to write something like that to me. But if I see someone come in and they become a familiar face, I can allow myself to have that kind of relationship and tone of voice with my customers. And that's the power of a small business. As a customer, I know that small businesses are faced with competition coming from big businesses. And it makes me feel good as a customer to support the small merchant. And so all of this is a formula for a stronger relationship amongst customers and merchants, which ultimately brings customers and merchants closer, which is what Fortis does.
I imagine how Washda could put an automated message to remind some customers every month, and others before Christmas when they're going to visit their families. Hero bottles of oil look just like presents, a bright, clear blue color.
A lot of people, they looked at the bottle and say, why blue? Why blue? Why blue?
It's very bright blue. Right?
It's very bright blue. They did not realize the concept I was going through. I designed my own brand colors. I based it all on the Palestinian industry of hand-blown glass in the West Bank, which is clearly blue. That very striking royal blue. And and also we have pottery in Palestine, which is the main colors are white and blue. And sometimes they put a little bit of accent colors. So I did the design based on that, which is not usually. Usually people, they go with embroideries, they go with the olive tree, the olive branch, these things which is we're used to. I chose to go with the industry because the industry is almost disappearing. The hand-blown glass is not even 30% productivity now. And the pottery is more or less the same. So it's the forgotten. It's a forgotten thing, unfortunately. It used to be in Khalil, you know, streets full of these people who do hand-blown glass. Now, when you pass in that street, you'll find it all shut down, unfortunately. I got so many questions about why and this and that. But when I used to explain what is the source of inspiration for this specific color, then they realize, oh, yeah, It is the hand-blown glass. Oh, yeah, I have one, or I have a jar, or I have glasses, or I have this. I was stubborn in that. I was stubborn in my design concept, and I kept it because I believe in it. And I always tell them, listen, this color is an old color. This specific blue, it goes in the mosques. In the old mosques, you'll find stripes of that specific blue, which is a very old color. They used to make it from Nila, something they call it Nila, and also from the glass. I told them, look at the Aqsa. The Aqsa is all sort of blue color. So we should celebrate all this showing us parts of new parts of Palestine, that parts we never pay attention to. I was stubborn in that. And I'm glad I did. Everybody loves the bottle.
I myself knew little about this art. So after the interview, I had to figure out what kind of magic glass Warsta was talking about. And I was shocked. The glass-blowing tradition has existed for so long that it is impossible to reliably name its origins. It has thousands of years of history. It goes back as far as the ancient Phoenician glass. The precise production process is a trade secret that was maintained by a few Palestinian families and passed through generation by apprenticing children. As one master of the craft said, you can learn to play the oud at any age, but unless you begin glasswork as a child, you will never become a master. Hebron glass was most often used to make drinking and eating vessels, as well as olive oil, and later, petrol-based lamps. But the most exciting story, it seems to me, is that of Hebron glass beads. Hebron's glass merchants managed to develop agencies and mercantile relations, a clientele system, with both Karak in East Jordan and Cairo to market the products. As a result, since at least the 16th century, Hebron communities were established in these two cities, and a whole social network was developed around the glass. Large exports of expensive Hebron glass items were sent there by guarded camel caravans. From Egypt, it went to the other parts of the African continent, with trading routes opening up along the Nile, connecting Egypt with Sudan and Ethiopia in the northeast of Africa. And among these glass were glass beads. Blue beads and glass beads with eyes were made for use as amulets, since they were considered particularly effective against the evil eye. And I couldn't believe that these blue beads with small white eyes, I know from my childhood in Russia. Those beads some of my classmates wore as a cool new strand. Actually, they were rooted in ancient Palestinian tradition. These ancient opaque yellow and green wound beads, shades of blue and green are more uncommon, were imported to Egypt, and then went up to Nile to the kingdoms that are now Sudan and Chad, beginning in the 70s. These beads, locally called mongur, were greatly admired by the women. Sudanese women have been making traditional beaded jewelry and accessories for generations. Moreover, Hebron beads were one of the forms of glass trade beads. They were an essential component during the establishment of trade networks between Europe, Africa, and the Americas from the 16th century. They were used as a primitive form of currency to buy gold, ivory, slaves, fruit, and palm oil. For over a century, Hebron beads were a staple currency by which to do business throughout Africa, but they began to lose favor by the 1930s. By the late 800s, Hebron discontinued making these beads. By the 1930s, the beads, which had not been available for 50 years, had gone out of fashion. British archaeologist Arquil wrote in 1937 about Hebron beads in Darfur, region of Western Sudan. Younger generation will have nothing to do with them, occasionally referring to them with contempt as the jewelry of slaves. Anyone who has them will give them away and will usually refuse to take anything for them. And then, they are particularly never worn. I have occasionally seen a single green one worn on a string round the ankle by old women as a cure for rheumatism. He mentions that Sudanese women were selling these beads to Hosa traders for a song. However, it's not entirely clear whether this said literally or it simply means a very low price. The traders took them home and ground down the rounded ends so the beads fit together on a strand better. Then they called them after their chief city, Kano, Nigeria. So giving birth to the myth that glass beads were made in Kano. Today, these beads became rare and precious. And they're being sold in Khartoum, the capital of Sudan, at steep prices to the granddaughters and great-granddaughters of the women who once gave them away. What a story! The huge tradition that was so powerful sparked ideas that are still circulating the world. It has almost disappeared and returns in new images. For Wajda, this tradition is very important.
And it took me 5 months to custom make this bottle in China. I tried to get bottles done in West Bank in the traditional way, but it is so difficult because they have no way of doing the closure of the bottle secured or proper. And they don't have the capacity to be able to like make you the quantity you want. Unfortunately, as I say, industry suffering. So I had to go to China and I had to custom make it in China. And it took me 5 months to finalize the right color and the right finish and quality.
Wajda is equally attentive to the quality of the oil.
I'm so biased, you know. You're asking a very biased person for these things. We don't do anything to it. When they do the harvest, they just take it and press it right away. No additional anything. Plus, I think it's the whole things together with the soil, with the atmosphere, with the area. For some reason, we look at it, this is a holy land, and there is a magic about it. So I really, maybe this is not scientific, I know. But for some reason, you know, even the taste is different, you know.
Really?
And we do, you know, before we buy any patch of olive oil from the West Bank, we do have our people who are testing the quality. For me, I care about what I receive is the exact quality that I was wanted and I was asking for. And I'm willing to pay whatever. I never negotiate prices. I don't believe you should negotiate and squeeze the farmers out of pennies just to satisfy yourself that you are a great businessman. You know, I'm against this big time because I know whoever dealing with this is their life being. You know, for me, an extra few dirham does not mean anything. It means a lot for them. For me, it means a lot to get the quality as is without people playing with it. This season I went through, I couldn't get the full quantity that I do ask every time. This season I was only able to get half the quantity. Every season is different. If last season was quality-wise rich, that means this season will not be much. But this year, it's not only that. It's less quantity, plus some people couldn't do the harvest for some obstruction, you know. So that even made the quantity less. Although the people there working so hard to get me the quantity I want, but I got half of it. And it took a long time. Usually, if you leave it to the natural time of shipping, you can ship anything from the West Bank to here within a week. Mm-hmm. But last shipment took a month and a half. That also made me think, I say, oops, am I gonna have anything, you know, Palestinian this year or not? I was really worried. Mm-hmm. So that is a big challenge to me, to keep the source and the availability of the products here. That's a big challenge. For example, I'm now out of certain products. In my last shipment, I asked them for sumac, they couldn't ship it from an area to an area to put it on the shipment. Even though the shipment took that long time, still. So these things happen, but I called the brand Levant, which is also Jordan, Lebanon, Syria. I was thinking a little bit ahead. If anything happened that I wouldn't get any of those products in the future, I will bring other products from the Levant area and introduce it as the other part of Levant. But I chose to start with the most difficult one. It's also an expanding future plan too, because I look at the area, I believe in Levant. I don't believe in borders between them because it has the same kind of food, the same kind of culture when it comes to food. So whatever it is all about olive oil, za'atar, summa, the traditional food, whatever. The plan is to have the best of every product from every country, which is now there are countries. Mm-hmm. I will not stop.
I loved hearing how much determination and greed Washda put into your business. And it's heartening to think that all of this, selecting oil around Palestine and negotiating with Chinese suppliers, Washda does alongside her office career. And while I was thinking about all of this, I came to visit JP at the Fortis office and met the team.
First of all, it was in one of the areas that I love. Yeah, the Fortis office is located in the Dubai offices, the second offices where we work 25 hours, hotel, cinema, Akil is located. It's a very buzzing, working type of environment, which I very, very love because it kind of reminds you like New York type of level, but on a very low level, like simplified version of New York, I would say, in that case. Yeah, I know it's just what I feel about that area. And you see there are a lot of people like having coffees, talking to each other about some deal, something. Then Doka came in, we discussed the business, and she was, from the very first second, she was so involved and open. And yeah, you feel a part of a huge team, like very strong team, because mostly I work and operate alone. So to meet like-minded people that share your enthusiasm or share your passion regarding something, it's always a nice thing.
My imagination already drew me a picture. Me and the guys like JP and Toka working in an IT company. We're having coffee breaks. And then real Toka says,
"You know for a fact there's no freelancer ever mm-hmm. who would ever argue that they can do this forever. Mm-hmm. It's not a forever thing. It is a transition between something, exploring, and then your actual mm-hmm. plan. So it's a calculated risk where you go like, okay, now I'm here, I want to be there, let me try this. And then you become a freelancer and mm-hmm. do that thing. If it works, it works. If it doesn't work, you might make changes, you might change the whole thing. But no freelancer can be a freelancer forever. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the career path to reach a very strong ground."
That's about me. That's about me. I'm the freelancer and it can't last. There are only two paths from here: to take a step to the left to a business or to the right to an office job. And I need to make up my mind. I have to figure out what I really want. And if you want to hear more stories from the Fortis team, how they made the choice between business and office, how they build their careers, then listen to our second podcast, Everything is Personal. And in the meantime, I've got a lot to think about. Washda told me not only about her business, but also something personal, about how she climbed Kilimanjaro to figure herself out. Listen to it.
"I had a health crisis at that time. You know, my health was number one. And when you have these kind of matters, you shut down everything and you focus only on that. And thank God, I did focus on that and I succeed. And even after that, I went climbing Kilimanjaro to prove to myself I am strong, I'm back, I am all is well. Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about Kilimanjaro Mountain and climbing?
It's I'll tell you, it's so high.
Well,
I barely made it.
Wow. So it was your commitment to yourself, yeah?
It was a commitment. A friend of mine wanted to start a charity, actually, in Jordan for the legally blind kids. And she told me, Wajda, we are a group of people. We are fundraising, and we want to go. What do you think? I said, listen, I have to ask my doctor. If he allows me to go for it, I will. And actually, he did. And I had to commit to a 6 months training. I never, ever committed to a 6 months training in my whole life. I'll buy the membership, never go, more than 3-4 times. But this time, I committed. I committed. And I made it. With difficulty, but I made it. Yeah.
It was beautiful.
I didn't feel as beautiful because I was exhausted.
You're like, I just need to go.
I just got there like half dead. I looked and said, okay, here it is. Oh, it was very cold because we went in January. When you go high, there is snow and it's a cold weather. Say, okay, I made it. Okay, let's go down.
You're like, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. The funny thing, when you climb up, you see some people coming down halfway. And psychologically, when you look at them, I say, oh my God, am I going to finish or not? I think I go for challenges, yeah. Which is I should stop if I want to rest in life. But no, for me, it means a lot to start with a Palestinian project, to focus on it first. And I told myself, if I'm able to succeed with the Palestinian product, that means any other product will be a piece of cake. And I chose to deal with the difficult one.
Our episode is coming to an end, and I still haven't made a decision. Do I accept the offer, or am I to give all my time to the business? I have 2 weeks to decide. So, let's meet here in 2 weeks. I started considering the offer with clearing my head. I too need at least a little traveling.
And because I wanted to shake a little bit, I was very burned out. That's why I decided to hike a little bit. And because Beyoncé released Cowboy Carter album, which is a very country type of album, so I wanted to listen to it in the mountains. So that was another motivation for me. There is one city, I forgot the name. To be honest, there is one place, it's like around 1.5 hour of driving from Dubai, and you arrive and there is some mountain, there is some green. It was very beautiful. It was magnificent. I even couldn't imagine that it would happen. And what is interesting, when I posted to my socials, people were texting and bombing me with questions like, oh my God, where is it? Where did you find it? You're not in Arab Emirates still? Where are you? And so on. Because everybody was surprised that you can find it in Arab Emirates. It showed me, it reminded me that, it's not, everything is not about the work. God, how to explain it? It's like you, whether whatever you're doing, you're still a person. Like your profession defines you, but not fully.
I'm curious, do you still keep this feeling or like you
Oh, no, remember? Of course not. Of course, it disappeared after a couple of days.
You're listening to Crossing the Desert, podcast by Fortis. Fortis helps seamlessly connect businesses and their customers and run the business. It assists in attracting and retaining customers, selling products and services, accepting payments both online and in-store, and managing finances and personnel. Join Fortis' social media. Links are in the episode description. Follow our podcast or add it to your favorite. Give us 5 stars or a heart and leave us a comment. This will help other listeners find out about us, and we will be pleased. and see you in the next episode. Production by Hatch Up Podcast Studio. Showrunners Alexandra Volkova and Yelena Volkova. Producer Albert Obhavikov. Scriptwriter and editor Livia Stivo. History consultant Alena Podnebenna. Sound designer Mikhail Vasilyev. And I'm your host, Isaac Delonian.